All right, let's dive into a case today that's really all about presidential power and congressional authority. You know that little thing, the Constitution, Clinton v. City of New York.
Yeah.
Imagine, you order a pizza, all the toppings, the works, but right before it gets to you, someone picks off all the mushrooms.
That's a pretty good analogy.
Kind of annoying,
But
right?
yeah.
Well, that's kind of what happened in this case, but instead of pizza toppings, we're talking about parts of a law.
Yeah, and in this case, the topping picker, you could say, was the President of the United States. And they were using this tool called the Line Item Veto Act of 1996.
Okay, the Line Item Veto Act. Now, this act, on the surface, it seemed like a good idea. It was meant to give the president, the power to cut wasteful spending from those big spending bills. Get rid of all his earmarks, right?
Right, who wouldn't want that? It sounds like a good way to make the budget leaner, maybe a little meaner.
Yeah, exactly. But as with so many things that involve the law, it wasn't quite that simple. President Clinton ended up actually using this line item veto power on a couple of bills, big bills, the Balanced Budget Act of 1997 and the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. And well, not everyone was exactly thrilled about that.
Yeah, not everyone. This is where those missing toppings become really important. So you had New York City hospitals, they were really depending on some specific Medicaid funding, and that got vetoed. And then you also had some potato farmers, and they got hit with a tax provision that wasn't very favorable to them. And they felt really directly impacted by these cancellations. So they decided, hey, we're going to take this to court.
That makes sense. I mean, I can see why they'd be upset, but could we just pause for a second?
Sure.
I know we have really smart listeners. They know their stuff. But before we get into all the legal details, can you just remind us, what standing means in this context? Why was that even a question in this case?
Oh, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Standing is basically like a legal VIP pass. You can't just kind of waltz into court and challenge a law just because you don't like it. You have to show you've been personally injured in some way, affected by that law. So in Clinton v. City of New York, what the Supreme Court had to figure out was whether those hospitals, those potato farmers, were they actually hurt enough by those vetoes to have a right to sue? And ultimately, the court said, yeah, you know what? They did have standing because those vetoes directly impacted them. They actually caused real concrete harm.
So it's not just about having an opinion. You have to be personally affected. Okay. All right. So now we've got our legal VIPs all figured out. Let's get to the heart of this case. What was the big constitutional, showdown here?
At its core, the case was really about whether the Line Item Veto Act was it constitutional? Did it violate the Presentment Clause? You know, that part of the Constitution that explains exactly how a bill actually becomes a
Yeah.
law.
Yeah, the Presentment Clause. It's like the Constitution's recipe for lawmaking, right? Can you break that down for us? Because I have a feeling there's a reason why it's such a big deal in this case.
You're exactly right. The Presentment Clause, which is found in Article 1, Section 7, it lays out a really specific process. So, you know, a bill has to pass both houses of Congress, right?
Right.
Then it goes to the president's desk. Then the president has two choices, really. They can sign it, which makes it law, or they can veto the whole thing, which sends it back to Congress.
Right.
But this whole line item veto thing, it seemed to kind of throw a wrench in that very carefully designed system.
Yeah, I'm starting to see where this is going. So it's like the president was trying to rewrite the recipe after the dish was already cooked and ready to go.
Exactly. The court saw the line item veto as giving the president the power to actually change a law after it had already become a law, basically amending it without having to go through that whole congressional process. And they argued that's not okay, that power belongs to Congress.
Okay, so we have this clash of constitutional titans here. We have unhappy plaintiffs, and we have a trip to the Supreme Court. So let's talk about that majority opinion. What were Justice Stevens's main points when he decided to strike down the line item veto act?
Okay, so Justice Stevens, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really emphasized how carefully crafted the legislative process is. He called it finely wrought. I mean, think of it like a complex recipe. Every ingredient has a very specific purpose. You change one ingredient, and you could alter the entire dish. So Stevens argued that the framers, they created this complex system very intentionally, with checks and balances to prevent anyone from making laws too quickly or without thinking them through. And the line item veto, in the court's view, it really messed with those carefully measured ingredients. It disrupted the balance.
So basically, the court was saying you can't just tinker with a recipe after it's already gone through the whole process.
Right.
But I know there were some pretty strong dissenting opinions in this case as well. Justices Scalia and Breyer, they weren't totally convinced by the majority's reasoning.
Right.
That's
Okay.
right. So fill us in.
So Justice Scalia, who was well known for his very strict interpretation of the Constitution, he really took issue with this whole idea of standing.
Oh, okay.
He believed that some of those plaintiffs, you know, maybe even those potato farmers, hadn't actually shown they were harmed enough by the vetoes to have the right to challenge the law at all. He was really focused on the question of, okay, who actually has a right to sue, rather than that bigger constitutional question.
So Scalia was like all about making sure everyone was following the rules of the courtroom,
yeah,
even in a case like this big.
Right.
What about Justice Breyer? What was his take on the line item veto?
Justice Breyer was a little bit more pragmatic. He argued that the Line Item Veto Act, you know, maybe it wasn't perfect, but it was a practical way to address a real problem. Wasteful spending in legislation. You know, all that pork barrel spending, all those little pet projects, earmarks, all the things that sometimes get snuck into those big bills. He saw the line item veto as a good tool for just cutting through all that, maybe making the budget process a little more efficient.
Ah, the infamous pork barrel spending, all those extra toppings that nobody really asked for.
Exactly.
But if the goal was to cut wasteful spending, like, why didn't the court agree with Breyer? What made the line item veto different from other executive powers in their eyes?
Yeah, that's a key question, and it really gets to the heart of the court's concerns about the separation of powers. You see, the court recognized that the president does have some influence over spending. Think about impoundment, where the executive branch basically chooses not to spend funds that have been allocated by Congress.
Okay, so impoundment is like the president saying, I'm not eating these mushrooms even though you ordered them.
Right, exactly. But the line item veto, that was seen as something totally different.
Okay.
Impoundment is about choosing not to spend money that's already been allocated. But the line item veto, that was about actually like legally voiding parts of bills that had already been passed by Congress and signed into law. The court saw that as the president overstepping their authority and stepping on Congress's toes, really, you know, when it comes to lawmaking power.
It sounds like the court was drawing a very clear line in the sand between the branches of government, even if it meant, you know, sacrificing a little bit of budgetary efficiency.
Right.
So after this decision, the line item veto, gone for good at the federal level, right?
Right.
But what about those individual states? Did it have any implications for them?
That's a really important distinction. The Supreme Court's decision in Clinton v. City of New York, it only applied to the federal government. Lots of states have their own constitutions that actually do give their governors line item veto power. So the whole power dynamic, it can play out very differently at the state level.
So the line item veto lives on in certain parts of the country. Wow. This case really, like, opened up a can of worms, didn't it?
It did.
It wasn't just about veto power. It really sparked a fundamental debate about how our government actually works. And I bet some of those debates are still going strong even today, especially when we think about executive orders and all those budget battles that happen in Congress. But, you know, we're going to dive into all those juicy details in the next part of our deep dive.
We will. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
So before we went down that, you know, that whole thing about state level veto powers, we were talking about how Justice Breyer saw the line item veto as like a practical way to deal with, you know, too much spending.
Right.
But wasn't there some like pushback even within the line item veto act? Didn't it give Congress like a way to kind of fight back against those presidential cancellations?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not like Congress just gave the president, like, you know, a free pass to just, you know, go in and change laws as they pleased. The act actually did have a way for Congress to override a line item veto.
Right.
But as you can probably guess, it wasn't exactly easy.
Yeah, it wasn't a simple majority vote. To overturn a presidential cancellation, you actually needed a two-thirds majority in both the House and the Senate.
Oh.
Which is, I mean, that's a pretty high bar to clear, especially when you think about how divided Congress usually is.
Yeah, for sure. So even with that override option, like, the court still felt like the line item veto act just gave the president like way too much power.
Yeah, exactly. They weren't convinced that, you know, this override provision was enough to really address those big constitutional concerns. They argued that just by allowing the president to just change laws on their own, even with a congressional override, like that just fundamentally changed how lawmaking worked.
Yeah, it's like giving the president the power to like rewrite the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Even if Congress could like object later.
Exactly.
So the court was really trying to protect Congress, huh?
Oh, yeah. They were really emphasizing that the framers created this process for a reason.
Right.
And that process needed to be respected. They weren't willing to just deviate from that, even if it meant, you know, sacrificing a little potential for efficiency.
So it's like they were saying, look, we get it. this line item veto might seem like a neat trick, but you just can't hack the system. The Constitution is the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
So that brings us to, like, you know, what happened after the court's decision. You might think that after, like, such a big ruling, the line item veto just, like, vanished.
Right.
But it didn't exactly disappear quietly, did it?
No, not really. So in 2006, President George W. Bush actually tried to bring it back, but with a little bit of a twist. He proposed, like, a modified version of the line item veto.
Oh, okay.
Hoping to kind of address those constitutional concerns that had come up in Clinton v. City of New York.
A modified version. Okay, this is getting interesting. So, like, what was different about Bush's proposal? Did he, like, figure out a way to make it, I don't know, more constitutional?
Well, the main difference was that Bush's proposal, it tried to give Congress, like, a bigger role.
Yeah.
Instead of the president just canceling spending items, he would propose cancellations. But those cancellations wouldn't actually happen unless Congress approved them. And they had to do it within a specific time frame.
So it was more like a collaborative approach.
Right.
Yeah.
A veto suggestion box instead of just, you know, the president, you know, just canceling things.
Exactly. It was trying to shift the power back towards Congress, making it more of a joint effort. But even with those modifications, this new version of the line item veto, it faced a lot of opposition.
I bet. I mean, Congress probably wasn't too happy about revisiting this whole power struggle.
Right.
You know, the one they had already won. So, like, did Bush's proposal go anywhere?
Not really. It had, like, you know, a lot of pushback from both Democrats and Republicans,
yeah.
You know, who were worried about giving the president too much power, you know, overspending.
Yeah. It seems like some of those, like, you know, political wounds, they run pretty deep in Washington.
They do.
Especially when you're talking about, like, messing with those core principles of the Constitution.
Yeah.
But this whole thing really just shows that, you know, that debate over presidential power and spending, you know, keeping spending under control, it didn't end with Clinton v. City of New York.
No.
It's like a constant tug of war.
It is. It is. The desire to give the president more power over spending, you know, it comes up again and again, especially when there's like gridlock or, you know, everyone wants to tighten the federal budget. It's very tempting for people who see it as a way to, you know, make the government more efficient or, you know, get their own policies through.
Right. It's like this never-ending search for, like, the perfect budget-cutting tool, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it means, like, bending the rules a little bit.
Yeah.
But as Clinton v. City of New York reminds us, you just can't ignore the Constitution.
Right.
No matter how good your intentions might be.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, this case, it gives us, like, a really good way to look at that tension, you know, that constant tension between efficiency and actually upholding the Constitution, upholding those checks and balances. It makes us ask ourselves, like, how much power are we really willing to give to any one part of the government, even if it's for, you know, a good reason?
It's like that saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Right? Yeah.
And when you're talking about the Constitution, those good intentions, you have to really think about what could happen.
Right. You can't just throw it out the window.
Yeah, exactly. You can't disrupt that balance of power.
You can't. You can't. And this is exactly why Clinton v. City of New York is still important today.
All right. So welcome back to our deep dive into Clinton v. City of New York. We've been talking about, you know, the line item veto and how it went up against the Constitution.
Right.
And we even talked about how some people tried to, like, bring it back.
They did. They did.
But, like we were talking about before, this case, it has implications that go, like, way beyond just 1998.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Clinton v. City of New York, it might seem like a history lesson, you know?
Yeah.
But it's actually surprisingly relevant to things that are happening right now in politics, like all those debates about executive orders and how spending bills work.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. We hear about executive orders all the time on the news, but I gotta admit, I'm still not quite sure what they are.
Right.
And how they connect to this case.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in all that, like, legal terminology.
Yeah.
So basically, executive orders are directives that the president issues to kind of manage how the federal government works.
Okay.
And they do carry the weight of law, so they're, like, legally binding. But here's the thing. Executive orders can't contradict laws that Congress has already passed.
Okay, so the president can't just, like, you know, go off and create new laws with executive orders.
Right.
There are, like, limits.
Exactly. And that's where Clinton v. City of New York is so important. Remember how the court really didn't like how the president was basically rewriting laws with that line item veto?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same idea with executive orders. The president can use them, to clarify or like enforce laws that already exist, but they can't just make brand new laws or undo laws that Congress passed.
So it's like the president can, I don't know, add some extra instructions to the recipe.
Right.
But they can't like change the ingredients or just throw the whole dish out.
That's a great way to put it. Okay. And that distinction, like between clarifying and actually creating something new, it's debated a lot, especially when a president, you know, kind of pushes those boundaries of their power.
Right.
Critics will say that some executive orders go too far.
Yeah.
They overstep and they kind of get into Congress's territory.
And I'm guessing Clinton v. City of New York, it comes up in those arguments a lot.
Oh, yeah. All the time. It's like a really important precedent
right.
that basically says, hey, Mr. President, you can't just go around the legislative process.
Right.
Even if they have a good idea or they want to do something quickly, you know, they still have to work within that constitutional framework.
It's pretty amazing how this case from way back when is still influencing these like huge political debates today.
It is.
It really shows you those like, you know, big questions about power and process, they never go away.
No, they don't. And we see those same questions when we look at, you know, fights about spending bills, too.
Yeah.
Think about all those negotiations over government shutdowns or the debt ceiling or, you know, how the budget gets allocated. All those things are basically a constant back and forth between the president and Congress over who gets to control the money.
Yeah, those budget battles, I mean, things can get pretty heated. It's like watching a poker game.
Right.
Where each side is trying to, like, you know, outsmart the other one.
Exactly. And they're always looking for an advantage.
Yeah.
And sometimes they test those constitutional limits. And it's those moments when things are really tense and a lot's at stake. That's when those lessons from Clinton v. City of New York, you know, they really matter.
It's like a reminder that even when things get crazy, you know, those constitutional safeguards, they're there for a reason.
Exactly. The court, when they decided Clinton v. City of New York, they were saying that the Constitution's process for making laws and figuring out the budget, that's not just like a formality.
Yeah.
You know, it's there to protect us from unchecked power, to make sure that one part of the government doesn't just take over.
So even if it means things move a little slower or people have to compromise more,
right.
The court's basically saying that's just the price we pay to have a balanced government.
Exactly. It's a reminder that just getting things done quickly isn't the only thing that matters.
Right.
We also have to protect those core principles that make sure we have a government that's based on laws, you know, not just what one person wants.
Well said. I think this deep dive has been really eye-opening. We started with this case about like a weird veto power, but
yeah.
We ended up exploring some really big questions about, you know, how our government works.
That's what's so great about the law, right? Even the most like technical cases, they can show us some really important things about power and how things work and those principles that really shape our democracy.
So Clinton v. City of New York might not be a name everyone knows.
Right.
But it's a case that's had a big impact. And it reminds us that the Constitution, it's not just some old document. It's something that's still shaping how our government works today.
It is. It is. And it's up to all of us, whether you're a lawyer or just a regular citizen, to really understand what it says and participate in those conversations about how our government should work.
That's a great point to end on. So thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Clinton v. City of New York. We hope you enjoyed it. And remember, the Constitution, it's not just for lawyers and judges, it's for all of us. It's the foundation of our democracy. So until next time, keep those minds curious and keep those questions coming.